the Reformation in the Christian context went back to the original founders, the apostles. Now, if you apply this model to Islam, where would we go back to the original founders of Islam?
Sociologist Dr. Alvin Schmidt, author of The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West.
You'd go to Muhammad, the man who was in many ways Islam's first terrorist, who conquered the world by the sword, and who said, I'm the last of the prophets, and I'm sent with the sword. And to think that we can have reformation like we had in the Christian context is a specious argument.
You can meet and hear Dr. Alvin Schmidt making the case against Islam on June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. It's the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Check it out at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The Evangelical Lutheran Church of America elected its first openly gay bishop on Friday in California.
Wake up, Martin Luther. Welcome to
Is this committee really prepared to go to the south side of Chicago in neighborhoods that have never seen a father? And are you really prepared to tell those people that kids don't need a mother and father?
The day of grace is today. The day of grace is every day, and the day of grace is forever.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
Well, I remember it wasn't that long ago when President Barack Obama was elected to his second term. One of the biggest things that pro-lifers saw in the future was a changing face of the U.S. Supreme Court. If he got a resignation or a death on the Supreme Court, we were all pretty sure. We still are, that he would attempt to pack the court with pro-Roe justices. Would that mean that Roe v. Wade is here to stay? Is it possible that a more pro-Roe court might actually want to undo Roe because it's not strong enough in favor of supporting abortion on demand? Welcome back to Issues Etc. live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 4th of June. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Wesley Smith joins us here for the first half hour. In this hour, we're going to talk about the possibility of overturning Roe v. Wade by liberal Supreme Court justices. We'll also talk feudal care theory in Canada. And then Dr. James Nestegan joins us to talk about the election of the first openly gay bishop in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. You can join us as well, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Wesley Smith is a regular guest. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center for Human Exceptionalism. He's author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America, and he writes the Human Exceptionalism column for National Review Online. Wesley, welcome back.
Hey, Todd, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's simply assumed, and I think especially with the second term of Barack Obama, that if he has his way and packs the court, the high court, with pro-Roe justices, Roe is here to stay. You say not necessarily. Why?
Well, this is just something that hit me like a hammer this last weekend. I was speaking at the University of San Francisco. It was a bioethical seminar, based on the sanctity of life, and I was there to talk about bioethics. But I listened in on a presentation that dealt with abortion litigation, which I'm not involved in personally. And the speaker, who was a lawyer, was discussing how Roe v. Wade and the cases that came after it, most particularly a case called the Casey case, had permitted state pro-life activists to create certain laws that, for example, requires ultrasounds and various other forms of regulation of abortion that has, to some degree, reduced the number of abortions in this country. And it suddenly hit me that there are an awful lot of people who are in favor of abortion rights who look at that right as an absolute right, not as a partial right. Roe v. Wade basically said that a woman has a right to abortion based on privacy in the first trimester, and that as going into the second and then into the third trimesters, the state has an increasing interest in the life of the fetus because basically the case said nobody knows when human life begins. And, of course, by that they mean the moral value of life, not biological, because we know when we do know when biological life begins. And it hit me, my gosh, since Roe, which was 1972, there has been a strong movement in bioethics away from the concept of the moral relevance of human life. So you and I have talked on this program before. Peter Singer, as an example, has said that it isn't being a human being that matters, it's being a person. And a person is determined by having certain capacities, such as the ability to be self-aware over time. I think we also discussed, and so he says just infanticide is acceptable. We discussed also, I believe, the post-abortion article that created such a furor last year, which was basically predicated on the same thing, that because an infant doesn't have certain capacities, can't value their own life, they are not persons and therefore can be killed in the same way as a fetus can be in an abortion. And it struck me also that Justice Ginsburg, in fact, the lawyer who was discussing this, said Justice Ginsburg opposed Roe, not because she thought it was wrong to decide that abortion was a right, but she thought that the proper approach would not be the privacy approach, which was under the 14th Amendment, which was what Roe did, but to state as a right of a woman. And that's when the epiphany hit me. My gosh, I'll bet that the left would like to overturn Roe v. Wade and impose an absolute right for women, a fundamental right, as a woman's right, not in terms of privacy, but as the woman's right. And that could destroy the ability of these states to try to limit the abortion license. And when you consider that the changes in this culture, particularly among the ruling elite since 72 when Roe came down, and that there is a growing belief in the absolute right of a woman among that group through the ninth month. And you've even seen Planned Parenthood in Florida stating that if a baby's born alive, it should be up to the mother to after an abortion, that it should be up to the mother to decide whether that baby's life is saved. It just hit me. I could really see the left wanting to overturn Roe v. Wade to close the limited door that case and its subsequent progeny opened to abortion regulation, because they don't want any abortion regulation. So if President Obama were able to get a couple more Justice Ginsburgs on the court, let's say at the expense of, say, Justice Thomas or Justice Scalia, I think you could see Roe overturned, but from the other direction. And it's again trying to end the debate over abortion, which was what Roe tried to do and failed at getting done.
So essentially, such a court, if it were so inclined, could say, look, bring us a challenge to Roe. Boom, it's gone. Why? It's not strong enough in favor of abortion rights. Now bring us another case. And this is how we want – I mean, these kind of signals get sent. Bring us another case and argue it the right way this time, and we'll uphold it.
Yeah, and I'm thinking they wouldn't overturn Roe and then wait for another case. I think that if these, let's say, very pro-abortion justices were on the court so that it looked like it was a 6-3 for abortion rights, you might have activists saying, yeah, we want to overturn Roe because we don't like – all of these limitations that are being placed on the right to an abortion. From that perspective, we don't like the waiting periods. We don't like the information that has to be provided. We don't like the ultrasound laws and that kind of thing. And they might say that Roe was wrongly overturned because it was too limited in its scope, and that the actual purpose, the actual constitutional right, was the right of the woman to have absolute control of her body, and rather than the right to privacy. And I'm not saying this would happen. I've never heard the left argue it, but if I can think of it, they can think of it. And now I'm afraid that the intellectual foundation that would support that has been well laid out in these bioethical cases, and these bioethical opinions that it isn't being human that gives value, it's being a person. There's the literature is rife with that in medical literature, in bioethical literature, and so forth. And if it came to that, I could see actually some justices going in that direction. I'm not saying they would, but it occurred to me, holy cow, if Roe is basically has open, and it has, to some regulation, and you want to end regulation, the way you make it so states can't regulate Roe, I mean, can't regulate any regulation over abortion, is to do a better Roe v. Wade from that side of that side's perspective.
I'm not an attorney. We got a couple minutes here before we take our first break, but you are. Would that put the pro-life proponents in the weird position of saying, no, let's keep Roe, or is there something else that can be done?
I don't know. I just realized I just had this revelation this last weekend, and I posted a three-paragraph blog post on it, which I guess you guys read. But I'm just starting to think about this, and the more I think about it, the more I think it's actual a possibility. I haven't thought through the potential, but you would have to, certainly the pro-life side would be saying that the right to an abortion should not be absolute, and there would be an ironic position to cite Roe as the foundation for that, wouldn't there?
All right. I got to think about that a little bit more.
I'm sorry. Maybe it's just my paranoia. You know.
Well, that raises a question we'll get to on the other side of the break. Maybe what we need to be doing now is, while we still have the court we have, trying to establish precedent in the court with this court for the moral value of human life. We'll talk about that with Wesley Smith on the other side of the break. We're discussing the possibility of overturning Roe v. Wade by liberal Supreme Court justices. And then in a few minutes, we're going to turn to a case in Canada, a feudal care theory. If you don't want to be in the ICU or kept alive by medical means, you can say no. But what if you do want those means? Is there a problem? We'll find out after this.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler? Would you like to learn more about teaching students the essentials of biblical interpretation, law and gospel, or worldviews from a Lutheran perspective? Come join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education July 16th through the 18th at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, visit ccle.org. That's ccle.org.
You're 10 days away from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. You're listening to Issues Etc.
South Africa,
China,
Germany,
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world? India,
Sweden, Egypt,
France, Turkey,
Japan, Australia,
Canada, United Kingdom,
Hong Kong, Austria,
Finland, Malaysia,
Singapore, Bulgaria,
Korea, Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines,
Mexico,
Spain,
New Zealand,
Kuwait.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Wesley Smith is our guest. We're talking about the possibility of overturning Roe v. Wade by liberal Supreme Court justices. In a few minutes, feudal care theory in Canada. You can read Wesley Smith's columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Wesley, one more question on the Roe v. Wade liberal court idea that you had there. If this were to start to unfold this way, isn't it really the best strategy legally to begin to establish precedent with the current court on, as you said at the very beginning of our conversation, the moral relevance of human life?
Yeah, I think, and I haven't done, you know, the research to see. I mean, there is certainly, I'm sure, case law to that effect, but there are laws that have been upheld. I don't know if it's at the U.S. Supreme Court, for example, fetal murder laws that say if you kill a fetus, you can be charged with murder. So all of that might work in the direction of favoring that. But if the right to an abortion isn't about human life, but is about a woman's rights, then you're going to need everything you can get in order to at least try to create an equal conflict situation, if you know what I mean, where that the fetus, the humanity of the fetus is as important as the humanity of the woman, which you don't have now, by the way, under Roe. But that's because under Roe, the court said that's a matter of subjective opinion, right, when the value of human life comes into effect. So I do think you would want to have some, as much as you can, to say that being human is what gives moral value, not being a person. I'm not saying you would want court decisions, but I think you would certainly want to put as much as you could in, especially in the kind of, because this would be a matter of first impression, as they say in law. That means the courts would have some precedents, but they wouldn't be completely on point, and they might begin to look at the medical literature, the philosophical literature, and the bioethical literature. And I'm alarmed enough by my own thought to think that it's really important that an increasing amount of energy be put into defending the importance of human life because it's human, rather than as an objective matter, rather than as a subjective matter, because in these cases of first impression, often the courts do look to kind of law review articles, bioethical review articles, journal articles. And I don't frankly think that, and it also has to be predicated on rational bases as opposed to religious bases, not exclusively so, but at least to some degree. And I don't think that that advocates for the sanctity of life are engaging that sufficiently. I've been arguing that for several years, but with this kind of smack across the side of the head my brain gave me, I think it's even more urgent.
Let's turn to the subject of feudal care that we have talked with you about many times. Now, if someone doesn't want to be in, if they're put in a position where it might be possible to spend time in an ICU near the end of their life, or if they don't want to be kept alive with medical treatment, they can certainly say no, and that is generally still accepted to be the patient or the family's decision. What if they want to say yes? What if the patient or the family wants to say yes, and they happen to live in Canada?
Or Texas. Or a few other states, but primarily Texas in this country. Texas has a law, specific law, that says if a doctor does not wish to provide wanted life-sustaining treatment, I'm emphasizing wanted, then Texas doctor has the right to go to the hospital ethics committee and say, I do not believe that this violates my values, and I want this treatment withdrawn based on my values, even though the family or the patient might want it, even though it was in a written directive from the patient. The Texas law then says that the bioethics committee holds a hearing. They will hear from the doctors. They will hear from other caregivers. They will hear from the family. And then in a secret decision-making, they will decide whether or not that care has to be provided. And if they say it can be withdrawn, the patient only has, or the family, 10 days to find another institution willing to provide that treatment, at which point the hospital can stop it. It's called medical futility or feudal care theory. It is happening in Texas. Canada has been having several cases to this effect. There is not a specific law in Texas allowing that, but there have been a lot of cases beginning to be brought in which doctors are fighting with families for the right to say they have the final say. And you're beginning to see some of that going on in the states, that kind of litigation in the states as well. And I think this is going to become an even bigger issue because of the cost-cutting imperatives in the Affordable Care Act, where the government, the federal government, as we move along in the next several years, is going to be creating cost-benefit guidelines to be followed in terms of what is covered for insurance companies. And it wouldn't surprise me in the least if they say one way to save a lot of money is if a doctor feels that this is non-beneficial care or if this is inappropriate care. There are a lot of words that are used that they will be able to stop it. Now, realize that when you're talking about futile care as I'm describing it, you're not talking about physiological futility, meaning you're not saying, I don't want to provide this intervention because this intervention will not work. You're saying, I do not want to provide this intervention because it will or it may work. And that is the outcome that we don't want, keeping the patient alive. That's the problem here, because in a sense, futile care theory declares the patient to be futile, states that saving the life of a patient when that's what the patient wants is not the ultimate purpose of medicine, and says that some lives are not worth living. In essence, it creates an implied duty to die, and I think it's a real problem.
Now, you mentioned the Texas case. Tell us a little bit about the case that you read about in the Toronto Star.
Yeah, in Canada, there's a case in which you have a man who's in the intensive care unit named Joaquim Silva Rodriguez, who basically has said he has a progressive neurological disease that's kind of like Alzheimer's that makes him both physically incapacitated and also that his mental state is such that unlike something like, say, Lou Gehrig's disease, he's lost both his physical and his mental capacities. But he said before he became non compos mentis repeatedly, I want to be kept alive. And he's a Catholic also. And so it's in his faith belief that he wants to be kept alive. And there have been times when he has needed respiratory support to maintain his life. I think it's happened 3 times. And now the doctors are saying, we're not going to do it a 4th time. Even though that's what the patient wants, even though that has worked in the past to keep the patient alive, we don't think this is a life worth living. We think this is causing suffering. This is not good for the patient. But this is what the patient said the patient wanted. So you're basically having the doctor saying that in the end, we have the final say, not the patient. And, of course, that turns patient autonomy on its head. And you end up in a situation where if a patient wants to die, the doctors cannot gainsay it. But if the patient wants to live, that depends on whether the doctor thinks it's worth living.
In both of these cases, the one created by the Texas law there and the specific one that you just described from Canada, are we looking at what people called not too long ago when we were considering health care changes in this country, death panels?
Well, I think you could use that term. Sarah Palin coined that term, and it's not yet in Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, so let's take that out of the equation for the moment. But you certainly have futile care theory is certainly an ad hoc, let's say, at the bedside kind of death panel, where you will have a bioethics committee in the Texas case deciding that life-sustaining treatment will be withdrawn. I mean, I think it's, even though it's a polemic term, I think death panel applies in that situation. In the Canada case, you have this thing being fought out in court. And so, you know, I think you could, you know, you could, this, is it a death judge? I don't know. But what's really concerning me is that as we move forward with the cost containment agenda, that you could end up with specific authorization, as in Texas, in other places as well, and perhaps even part of Obamacare cost-benefit guidelines.
Well, then, with only a minute before we close up here, Wesley, you say that when it comes to this futile care theory and the cases that we see before us, hard cases make bad law. That's especially important to remember. Why?
Well, you end up in a situation, for example, I said in my blog about this case in Canada, that's not the decision I would make. I would have said, you know, when I'm in that spot, don't put me on a respirator. But who cares what I think? It isn't my life. It's not my body. It's not my family. But the tendency might be, well, this is such an extreme case, we're going to say doctors do have the final say. Well, once you've done that because of a very difficult case, you've created a principle, and it won't stay at those extreme levels. It then moves right into the center.
Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center for Human Exceptionalism. He's authored several books, including Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America. He writes the Human Exceptionalism column for National Review Online. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Wesley, thank you very much.
I hope I'm wrong, Todd. Thank you.
Yeah, I hope you're wrong, too. I very rarely think that, but I am thinking that in this case. When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking about the very first openly gay bishop in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. I was not surprised to read this story when the election occurred on Friday. I was actually more surprised that it took them that long to get around to doing it. I was of the opinion that they would have done it back in 2009, but they waited 3 years, and they found the perfect candidate to be the first openly gay bishop in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and now they have him. Dr. James Nestegen will be our guest. He's professor emeritus of church history at Luther Seminary, and we'll talk about that for the last half hour of Issues, Etc.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
This is Pastor Tyler Arnold at Christ Lutheran in Platte Woods, Kansas City, Missouri. We are privileged to serve our Lord in word and sacrament through the historic liturgies of the church. Do join us for divine service at 8 and 10:45 and adult Bible study and Sunday school at 9:30. Each Wednesday evening we have Vespers at 7 p.m. Our address is 6700 Northwest 72nd Street, or call us at 816-741-0483. You can find us on the web at ChristLC.net. Come and be our guest at and with Christ.
There's no question that the kids have been completely lost in the shuffle during this whole 40-year war.
Suzanne Venker, author of The Flip Side of Feminism, on the impact of feminism on children.
There's no discussion of what children's needs are. You're not even allowed to discuss children's needs because, of course, the engine of the feminist movement is dependent on abortion and daycare. Those are the two things that remove children or babies from the equation so that we can achieve this faux version of equality. And without those two things, they have no movement. So there is no acknowledgement of what children's rights and or needs are in this discussion. It is solely about adult needs.
You can hear and meet Suzanne Venker making the secular case against feminism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Gloria Christi Lutheran, Greeley, Colorado; St. John's Lutheran, Rosemount, Minnesota; Trinity Lutheran, Waltham, Minnesota; Trinity Lutheran, Fredericktown, Missouri; Zion Lutheran, Gravelton, Missouri; Christ the King Lutheran, Billings, Montana; Redeemer Lutheran, Nashville, Tennessee; and Zion Lutheran, Douglas, Wyoming. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.